The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Well, hello, everybody. How you doing? Welcome. It's Tuesday, August the 11th. I am Peter Christian. That is Mr. Nick Christensen right over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
All right, and we have lots going on in the next couple of hours here on TalkBack. Coming up in about 5 minutes or so, we're going to be visiting with Henry Kriegel with Americans for Prosperity, and then Brian Musard is going to be joining us from Reminis Angus Ranch. That'll be at about 8:20. So, and then in the 9 o'clock hour, our special guest is going to be Dr. Patrick Barkey. He'll be on the phone with us, Director Emeritus of UM's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And
he'll be on at 8:30. He'll be on for an hour and a half. Gotcha. But yeah, the full 9 o'clock hour, yeah.
Perfect. All right. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, we just want to let you know that, what's going on in the world? What's the fire update right now?
Dennis was kind enough to send this over. He said, on the fire lines in the West Pioneers, firefighters were taking advantage of some clearing in the smoke, using more than 24 tanker retardant drops to stop what is now the largest fire in the state this year. The Sand Creek Fire, which has now burned nearly 16,000 acres, forcing evacuations along the Pioneer Scenic Byway and down into the northern Grasshopper Creek Valley. The adjacent Bobcat Lakes Fire to the north has burned over 7,600 acres. The fires have continued to try running to the east, with firefighters working to catch spot fires along the byway. The fires in the West Pioneers aren't the only ones keeping firefighters on edge. The Black Bear Fire, burning in the Sapphire Range east of Hamilton, is now over 1,800 acres with no containment, as fire crews work to drive the blaze into previous burn scars in hopes of slowing it down. Mm. Meanwhile, the Moose Fire, which has burning a couple of weeks west of Phillipsburg, is now over 4,500 acres. Numerous forest roads are closed in that area. The Granite County Sheriff has issued a yellow evacuation warning for all residents south of the Montana Highway 38 junction with Moose Lake Road. This includes Moose Lake Road, Ross Fork Road, Copper Creek Campground, and Moose Lake areas. The red evacuation order for Frog Pond Basin remains in effect. And they said, don't forget closures are in place up in the Skalkahoe Highway because of the Black Bear Fire. You can't drive through between Hamilton and Upper Rock Creek. So wow. That's kind of the fire update.
Yeah. As I gaze out the window here, I see one of these days I'm going to look out that window and actually see a mountain. That would be a really nice change. We've been pretty socked in here in the Missoula Valley for quite some time, and looking forward to some weather. I mean, maybe a little bit of wind. Of course, we don't want too much wind because that's going to make the fires expand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we could sure use some rain.
Yeah. So. Yeah, rain would be good. I know Montana FWP also said that stage one fire restrictions are in effect on FWP properties in Lake County. So, yeah, state parks, fishing access sites, wildlife management areas, and all other lands in Lake County managed by Montana FWP have entered stage one fire restrictions. This action followed stage one restrictions that were put in place by Lake County and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. So, yeah, it's, and I know here, kind of Missoula Bitterroot area, we're in stage two still. So, yeah, everyone all across the state's kind of watching these closely. So.
Well, I'm just hoping that people are handling all this because when you can't see the sky and you can't see the sun and can't see the mountains, it gets to be a little depressing now and then. So just kind of lift up your spirits, turn on KGVO because TalkBack is on. 406-721-1290 is our number. We're going to come right back. More of TalkBack on the way here in just a minute. Looking forward to hearing from Henry and Brian in the next few minutes. So stay with us on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
You've just had...
Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather. Areas of smoke again Tuesday with highs in the mid-80s, but that will probably be the last day of this long-holding weather pattern as the high-pressure ridge starts to break down with a few clouds Tuesday night. Then Wednesday, we'll see smoke, some sun in the afternoon with increasing clouds and a chance of showers. Those may produce some thunderstorms Wednesday night. For Thursday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon and much cooler with highs in the upper 70s. Overnights and mornings will stay cool with lows in the 40s.
This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided, except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Back on Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning, everybody, on this Tuesday, August 11th. I am Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and we're privileged to have with us Henry Kriegel on the line. Henry is with Americans for Prosperity. Henry, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Peter, how are you?
Doing great. So give us the update. What's going on with your organization right now?
Well, as you know, our partner group, AFP Action, has been engaged in the U.S. Senate race since the middle of May. And we've got our canvassers knocking doors, over 100 of them knocking doors throughout the state of Montana. And they're doing a great job bringing that same relentless energy we brought to Senate race just a couple years ago when we got Tim Sheehy elected to the U.S. Senate over a three-term incumbent and popular Democrat, John Tester. We're bringing that same relentless energy to this Senate campaign in support of Carl Ame, and we're happy with the direction of the campaign.
So, Kurt, tell me a little bit about his schedule. Obviously, when you're running for a major office like the Senate, obviously you're a very busy guy. So who's in charge of all that, and where is he going to be speaking? Anywhere here in Western Montana?
Well, you know, we're not a part of their campaign. We run a separate program altogether as a PAC, and so we don't coordinate those kinds of details.
Right.
But I can just tell you this, our people are going to be out there knocking doors. Now, we all are very well aware of Alani Bankhead's decision to stay in the race as the Democrat nominee for the U.S. Senate. And we applaud her for standing firm despite attempts by top Democrats around the U.S. and here in Montana asking her, pressuring her to step down. And also, she stood firm in light of the fact that her family received threats from those among the center left. I don't know who they are, but she held firm, and I congratulate her. She's authentic. She's got courage. And that also bodes very well for Curt Ame in our efforts, because in a three-way race, Curt Ame should have an easier path to victory. We take nothing for granted, though. And our team is ready to run through the tape, knock doors, campaign all the way through November 3rd. Perhaps a little bit of an adjustment in our resources, but we are there to the end because we believe that Curt Ame is the man for the job. He's got a proven track record of success. I've mentioned this before. He has the record of being the most the biggest tax cutter in the state of Montana as revenue director under Governor Judy Martz. He lowered the personal income tax levels from the highest bracket from 11% down to 6.9%. We certainly have a long further ways to go. And our Americans for Prosperity, our C4 group, will be working with the state legislature during this upcoming session to get a flat tax down to 4.7%. That's one of the governor's main objectives. Our C4 group will be engaged in that work very heavily. But in the meantime, AFP Action will be out there knocking doors throughout the state of Montana to get Curt Ame across the finish line with strength, because we need a policy majority in the U.S. Senate.
All right. Yeah, indeed. I would imagine that what you folks are doing with Mr. Ame is very, very important to the state of Montana, and not just to Western Montana, but to all of the state.
Oh, absolutely. That's the beautiful thing about being in Montana. We're just a little over a million people. And yet we helped determine the balance of power in the U.S. Senate back in 2024. At the time when we were campaigning, Tim Sheehy would have been the 51st Republican senator. Fortunately, won two additional seats. But things are hanging in the balance. We don't know the fate of the U.S. House. It could tip the Democrats away, although things are looking better. We need to ensure that this administration has a majority in the U.S. Senate so that they can move forward with their work, survive any crazy things that might come out of the House, and solidify the gains that have already been made in terms of reducing income taxes across the board for all Americans through the Working Families Tax Cut, also known as the One Big Beautiful Bill, and other measures. So this is really, that's the thing. A little over 1 million people, yet we have an incredible impact on the nation as a whole because we get to elect two U.S. senators.
You bet. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, Henry, I was going to ask you, does AFP have any involvement in the other Senate race in the state?
The other Senate race? Which one are you referring to now?
Aaron Nick? Flint versus Sam Forstag.
Oh, you mean the other U.S. House race?
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. We have not taken a position on that. We have not, and yet, well, I've known Aaron personally for many, many years. He's a great American. He was a great talk show host and a really good friend. AFP Action itself has not entered that race for a number of reasons. So we had to dedicate our resources to the U.S. Senate race. And we have a lot of confidence in Aaron Flint and his team and those who are supporting him.
So if you wouldn't mind telling our audience a little bit about Americans for Prosperity, if they'd like to join or support in a minute and a half, how can you share that with us?
Oh, absolutely. We're a national organization founded in 2004. We're all about removing government barriers to success. That would include lowering taxes, reducing regulations, and allowing the individual to create and innovate free from government hindrance. We have chapters in 35 states and a presence in all 50. In Montana, we have offices in Bozeman, Billings, Great Falls, Helena, Kalispell, and in Hamilton. And we are here throughout the year. Many of our staff were born and raised in Montana, and we're a vital part of our communities. And we're really grateful and honored to serve the people of Montana to bring greater freedom and prosperity to all.
All right. It's a great pleasure to talk with you, sir. And we look forward to our next visit.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, Henry. We're coming up on a break here in about a minute. And when we come back, we'll
be 20 seconds.
Oh, 20 seconds. Brian Broussard will be joining us from Remedus Angus Ranch when we come back from the break. So we're going to come right back after this quick timeout. Thanks so much for joining us here on Talk Back. Statewide, of course, on the Montana Talks Radio Network. And our telephone number, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, we're going to come right back after this quick timeout here on Talk Back.
Announcing Paul.
We are back on Talk Back, and we're privileged to be joined by Brian Broussard with Remedus Angus Ranch. And we're just talking a little bit during the break about here we are in the heat of summer. It's almost mid-August. Where are you folks in your year?
Well, we're just wrapping up our hay season, just getting the last few fields baled and stacked, and getting ready to AI our cows. So breeding season for us is a little later than most. We don't calve until we start about Memorial Day. And so we're the end of August, we get ready and then we start breeding our cows and putting the bulls in. So it's a little different season. And I guess that's, you know, in the ranching business, you just follow the seasons and there's a different job in every season and it keeps it unique and colorful. You don't ever get bored in ranching.
But there's a rhythm to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there is a rhythm to it for sure. You don't kick against the goad in the weather and that rhythm. You just kind of go with it and figure out what works.
So how are you folks dealing with the smoke and the fires in the area and what has been an extended drought?
We've been outside of the fires. We've been pretty lucky with the drought. There's been some showers come through in July we haven't had in the past several years. It just kind of kept it green enough, and it kept the water coming down the creek, and so we were fortunate and able to leave that water on a lot longer. The fires, they're right on the verge of taking out Maverick Mountain and Elkhorn Hot Springs. It's been there for over 100 years, and wow. Those are sad, and I think the sad, when I say sad, I say that in a sarcastic, frustrating way, is because all these fires, we're looking at long periods of drought. It's on everybody's mind, and everybody talks about global warming, and everybody talks about the environment. And when you just sit back and watch things be destroyed, you watch the housing market go up, you watch the refusal of keeping a good, clean, healthy forest. And that's done on purpose. It's done willful. This devastating fire up here, the Sand Creek Fire and the Bobcat Fire, that's right on the verge of taking out Maverick Mountain and Elkhorn, that could have been stopped in one day. We go to the evacuation meeting and they say, there's the resources are thin. We don't have enough to put this out. Everybody needs to evacuate. And they have had, I don't know what they've had, probably 50 dumps at least of the fire retardant.
Right.
That could have been done with about 3 to 5 the first week that fire was out. But the states know, the governor knows, when it gets to a certain point, the federal government releases millions and millions of dollars. And these fires have gotten to be the new forest management. It's an industry. And very capable people that have the ability to prevent fires and to maintain forest now in a good way. Now they're just sitting down at the bottom of the hill with their equipment running, and they're the new reporters.
Wow.
Instead of taking care of things. And it's just a sad state of affairs for this country and how we take care of our environment.
Let me ask you this. If you could be in charge, if they gave you the big hat and okay, I'm in charge now, what would the first thing you would do?
Well, the first thing you do is you put planes on that. They have the fire retardant. They have the planes. It's the cheapest thing you can do is when you have a little tiny pillow coming out of that hill. If you've got 10 helicopters and 10 planes you can put on it a month later after it's wild and out of control, you can put one helicopter and one plane on it and put the thing out and keep it out and use all that money. I would use all that money. Instead of building these fire camps 30 miles away from the fire and watching it burn, all these professionals standing there watching it burn, use all that money, give it to the same people, but get up there and maintain these old roads so that if you ever had a fire, you can get a crew in there safely and get them out and maintain these forests and cut down this deadfall and keep the house. I mean, you can use that money in a productive way instead of a negative way. And we seem to be on the other side. And that's what I would do. I would definitely go at it, use those funds aggressively and have a nice, healthy forest and put those professionals that know how to keep it clean, keep it in good shape, put them to work doing what they know what to do instead of giving them a notepad and a paper and texting the reports. Those guys need to be up there with their cats taking care of it. And they know how to do it. It's frustrating for them too.
And I would imagine with Senator Sheehy being, having his own firefighting business, he can have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, you put people like that to work. But, I'm pretty disappointed in, we talk about the Republicans, how great they are, and they haven't done anything in 40 years. It's just getting worse. They vote for all this money, too. And they have the power to get this done, and that's both sides of Congress. They have the power, but once it becomes an industry and your state can get a little bit more money and your senator can bring home a little bit of cash, it's different. It's really different. And so I would, and I'm hard on my family, harder than I am on the neighbors. And so when I see the Republicans for 30 years and going to meetings with the Montana stock growers for 30 years and watching nothing happen, they're not trying that hard. because it could be done.
Well, Brian, tell us a little bit about how we can contact you at Remedus Angus Ranch, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, you can go to remangus.com. We're revamping our website. You can get pain relief tallow, skin balms. You can order all kinds of specialty meat online, boxed beef online. More stores in Montana are picking up Remedus Angus. We have Remedus Angus is being served at places like the Yellowstone Club, Heist, the Four Seasons in Jackson.
It's becoming
known as the best tasting beef in the country.
We are completely out of time. Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure. We'll be right back.
You bet. Enjoy. Bye.
Hey, if you're waking up.
Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather. Areas of smoke again Tuesday with highs in the mid-80s, but that will probably be the last day of this long-holding weather pattern as the high-pressure ridge starts to break down with a few clouds Tuesday night. Then Wednesday, we'll see smoke, some sun in the afternoon with increasing clouds and a chance of showers. Those may produce some thunderstorms Wednesday night. For Thursday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon and much cooler with highs in the upper 70s. Overnights and mornings will stay cool with lows in the 40s.
All right, we're back on Talk Back. Glad to have you along, ladies and gentlemen. The questions and taking your phone calls. I'm Peter Christian. And we are privileged to have with us Dr. Patrick Barkey, Director Emeritus at UM's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, now happily retired. Dr. Barkey, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Peter and Nick. Yeah, I'm doing great. Looking like there's a lot going on in the economy, so hopefully we have some nice discussions.
You bet. So, by the way, the phone lines are open. If you have a question for Dr. Barkey, he's here to answer them for you at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And he'll be with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. So get your calls in. We'll try to fill up those phone lines for you. But what are you working on right now, Dr. Barkey?
Well, other than working on my weekly minutes there, which sadly are not on your station anymore, but we'll get that fixed in the future. Doing some work on some healthcare work with hospitals, doing some work with, trying to get ready. It's possible I might be the keynote speaker for the outlook that's coming up in 2027. And if that's the case, I think the program is probably going to be something around entitlements, which is something I think more Montanans need to be aware of, need to be thinking about. Also trying to keep track of what's going on with data centers, always trying to keep track of the outlook and where we see things going on. Most of that's national. But there's Montana news out there as well. It's said to be the no hire, no fire economy. When it comes to job growth, there isn't much job growth, but then there's not many people collecting unemployment, certainly not in Montana. So it's a bit of a different spin on things and still trying to figure out what it all means.
So is it just kind of a stasis or just think things are, one side isn't battling the other side?
Well, it's easy to think that, and that it's kind of consistent with that. But in reality, the economy creates and destroys an enormous number of jobs every month. Some of that is normal. I mean, seasonal jobs wear off, go down. People are hired under contracts, they're temporary. So there's always a lot of churn in the labor market. So I don't think the word stasis quite fits.
Okay.
But it is kind of definitely a situation where the needle is not moving. In other words, there's been no widespread layoffs. There's been no new openings that are hiring lots of people. Really, you're looking at an economy that's fully employed, rolling up their sleeves and trying to deal with inflation, and quietly making more money as well.
Well, that's I would say that's good news.
Yeah, it's certainly good news. I mean, other than the inflation part, which is, you know, really bad news, and unfortunately that's not going away. But, you know, it looks like, and with some fits and starts, I mean, the good news is on wages. I mean, people and overall, you know, economic security, which is certainly rattled whenever you have big changes. Part of that is really helped by, I mean, the fact that we're sitting here in a Gulf, Persian Gulf situation where you have just a trickle of ships getting through the waterway that where 20% of the world's oil comes through, and yet the price of oil is still in the 80s. So it's you feel like you're walking on thin ice with that situation. And but the adjustments that markets have made and some of the things that people have been able to do to stave off the worst of that situation appear to have worked, at least for now. So that's certainly something to worry about. You know, that's the problem with radio, right? I mean, I can't show you the graph.
Imagine if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, at the recent BBER economic update, Jeff Daniel did put up a graph. Jeff Michael did put up a graph, and it showed the Strait of Hormuz traffic. Okay, how many ships per day went through there, and how many ships, you know, it went to zero, and now it's just a trickle. So, I mean, that's a pretty eye-opening picture.
You bet.
Of something that, you know, you can put it into words. It's like those pictures. It reminds me of during the COVID supply chain disruptions.
We are up against a commercial break. We're going to come right back, and Catherine's waiting to visit with you. Phone lines are open for Dr. Patrick Barkey here on Talkback. We'll be right back.
From a customer,
we're with Liam after his fourth military move. When being new is starting to get old. We're with all service members and their families. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today.
This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided. Except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. Good to have you along this morning. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Dr. Patrick Barkey, Director Emeritus of UM's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, is our guest on the phone. And folks are waiting to talk with you, sir. Catherine, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was reading an interesting article in Real Clear Politics this morning about China, and it's position in international commerce, and it's trying to erode the dollar's dominance. A lot of things that happened in the last year, but for the first time, a top five oil importer in India and Indian refiners structurally routed around the dollar for energy, and China's cross-border payment system posted record volumes. I'm wondering, there's two camps, I guess. One insists the dollar's collapse is imminent, and the other is discussing the entire alternative financial architecture and doesn't think that it actually matters. So I was wondering, I'm trying to understand this article. The cross-border interbank payment system, which is China's answer to the dollar clearing infrastructure, processed about $24.5 trillion in 2025 and that's up over 40% year after year. And it now connects several thousand institutions across more than 100 countries. That includes Hong Kong, Thailand, United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia. So I'm wondering how much is that going to affect the dollar's dominance in international commerce?
Well, if you're thanks for the question. If you're a cheerleader for the dollar, then I would say that there's going to be some tough periods ahead because you have of all the things you mentioned. I mean, you have an economy that is extremely large, China, and they're heavily involved in global trade, and so it's only a matter of time before their currency becomes more important relative to where it's been. But what, you know, I mean, just because when a country like China does business with another country, like Qatar or something, to buy oil, I mean, the conversion to dollars to facilitate those transactions is more and more awkward. The big problem with China is always going to be economic freedom aspect. I mean, there's not a very good track record of people getting money out of that country. You know, they accept money in, but they don't like to ship it out. So there's always going to be that whiff of authoritarianism in the background when you're dealing with China that I think is going to keep that in check. So in terms of understanding the article, interesting article, good things to be thinking about. I do agree, though, with the second take on the article, which is to say in the whole spectrum of global commerce, I don't know if it's going to matter all that much.
Okay. Thank you.
Catherine, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's get Bob on the line. Bob, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
Good.
You know, you mentioned, of course, what's taking place in the Strait. And my question to you is, if I'm looking down the road a little bit, you said so far so good. I feel like we're kind of in purgatory. We're not quite sure which direction we're going yet. But one of the reasons that we've seen prices stay relatively mild with oil is we've been drawing down strategic reserves at a pretty rapid rate. And we know that China had about a billion barrels of oil prior to this, and they've been using substantial portions of that. So you're not getting the ships through. You're seeing destruction with infrastructure, which I don't think has been fully accounted for in terms of the implications of that. And I can't ignore Russia and Ukraine, as Ukraine is aggressively going after Russian infrastructure, which is taking more, you know, product off the market. So while oil prices may be relatively benign, the big issue is the cost of diesel and gasoline, because you're seeing problems with refineries. And we're at major capacity here in the U.S. right now and coming into season when we go through these various changes. So I'm struggling a little bit with 2027, not so much 2026, when we may see the full implications of some of what's taking place. So any thoughts and comments?
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Well, you answered your own question, right? I mean, that's the issue. I think some of the things are heartening and some of the things are concerning. First off, I think I agree with you about the infrastructure, but there's so much more infrastructure that's vulnerable. I mean, it's a big concentration of petro-oriented operations there, not just on the oil and gas side, and fertilizer and so things like that as well. So one thing we seem to have gotten better at with each successive generation, that's how to blow things up. So, you know, I mean, these missile attacks and these vulnerabilities, which are strengths of the global economy, can be erased with some explosions. Do we worry about that? Of course we do. What's generally kept everything glued together, though, is mutual self-interest. And so that's the only thing I can say that's hopeful for all the risks ahead. You're absolutely right about the reserves. The reserves are they're just a thumb in the dike, so to speak, of the flood that would occur if demand really does to start to physically overtake the rather fragile supply system. You know, there's a couple of things to keep in mind.
We have about 30 seconds.
You know, the one thing that keeps coming to my mind is how demand has not slacked. So we don't like high gas prices. We have high gas prices. But the pressure on the market that you noted so aptly is largely because we haven't stopped consuming oil and gas. And that's a pressure.
We're going to come right back. And Dr. Barkey's with us till 10 o'clock this morning. We'll get Rick's call when we come back. 406-721-1290 is our number. Thanks for joining us here on Talk Back. Hey, if you're waking up. Thank you so much for being with us this morning on Talk Back. We appreciate it. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen is taking your phone calls. And, of course, Dr. Patrick Barkey is our special guest on the phone. And Rick has been standing by waiting to talk with you. So, Rick, you're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Barkey, I'd like to talk about disposable income, especially here in Western Montana. The media keeps telling us how horrible the economy is, but I grew up in the timber industry. When it died out, I went to work in the very expensive log home industry. And when that started dying out, I got on at a school district here in Hamilton. I never lost but maybe 2 days of full-time work through all those years. The disposable income thing is I see people here in Western Montana. They're begging for people to come to work. I'm almost 70. I can't tell you how many phone calls I've had. Hey, could you come to work at our small manufacturing plant? Whether it's small lumber companies or so on and so forth. And they get paid good money. But I'm almost 70. I see people buying $70,000-$80,000 trucks. I see Missoula and all of Western Montana, the rock concert capital of Montana. None of these tickets are cheap, and they're always sold out. The disposable income thing is like the media keeps talking about how bad the economy is, but I think the younger generations, they think that a perfect economy is the only economy. Well, nothing's perfect, and I don't know what people want. They seem to be spending their money hand over fist on leisure items. What is your take on people's perception of the economy? You just talked about the economy is better than what I thought it was, especially here in Montana. But what is the media's effect on how people perceive the economy? And if it's so bad, why do people have so much disposable income? That's my question.
Good question. So we've got about 4 minutes, Patrick.
Yeah, well, there's two or three different ways to tackle that. The first thing I would say just parenthetically is that the media really don't talk about the economy much at all. I mean, they talk about individual stories. The national media pay attention to the big ticket things. But especially here in Montana, you don't hear much about the Montana economy in particular, and that's been it's made my career, I'll tell you that, because there aren't many people to talk about it, and I'm one of them. So you're right. I think income is the strong point that you want to lead with. If you want to convince someone that the economy is in great shape, you talk about income, because there's two aspects going on. One, you can't miss what's going on with the financial markets in the background. I mean, the wealth and the net worth of people is risen tremendously because of what's happened in markets, what's happened with tech. Boom is putting money into people's pockets, and particularly in the demographic that you and I are both in. And the last thing I would say is that the labor market is reasonably tight. Exactly that story you told could have been told 4 years ago. It's been tight in Montana for quite a while. A little bit of a hiccup during COVID. But, you know, so all those things are helping. I think one of the things that people are worried about is distribution. Who's making the money and what kind of people are struggling? And the sense is, I don't have time to follow up on this, maybe after the break. My sense is that the imbalance between different haves and have-nots in the economy is one of the things that's creating the tension you talked about.
Well, we still have about 2 minutes, so if you'd like to just continue to talk about it, go ahead, please.
Well, there's two things, okay? The first is that people have looked at income as how it's divided between labor and capital. So income that goes to people is wages and bonuses and all that sort of thing. And the capital, it's owners of capital. It's the income that goes to companies. It's the income that goes to owners and so forth. And that has been tilting away from labor and towards capital for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the proportion of overall income in the economy going to labor as a share is it's quite a bit lower than it's been historically. And that causes people to worry about that a lot. But what people forget is that capital is what's going on to markets. I mean, it's the value of companies. It's profits, yes. It's earnings. It's return to investment, both physical investment and intellectual investment. And those things are booming. And that's a big story in the economy. And that's one thing that some people say they don't like, but in reality, it's creating a lot of wealth.
All right. With that, we're up against our hard break at the top of the hour. The first hour with Dr. Barkey is coming to a close. If you'd like to take part in the second hour, if you've got a question, maybe some of the comments have sparked a question from you for Dr. Barkey, please feel free to pick up the phone right now while we're doing the break, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we'll get you in the queue to talk with Dr. Patrick Barkey, who is Director Emeritus of the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research, and we deeply appreciate him being with us to share his vast knowledge of what's going on in the economy, not just here in Montana, but around the nation. So we're going to come right back after this quick timeout on this Tuesday edition of TalkBack.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Good morning once again, everyone. Hour number two of TalkBack is underway, and we're thrilled to be joining a whole new group of folks joining us here in the second hour of TalkBack. Let you know that Dr. Patrick Barkey is our guest this hour, just as he was in the first hour. Dr. Barkey is Director Emeritus of U of M's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, and I know that you are always busy, Dr. Barkey, putting together economic minutes that play all over the state. So welcome back.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah, it's fun. Been doing it for 20 years, so it's good exercise for my brain.
Well, it wouldn't be a good day on Town Square Media Radio without hearing Dr. Barkey at least once. So there you go. All right, so let's talk a little bit about for those who are just joining us, about the things that you're working on right now.
Well, mostly working on the economic outlook, trying to keep tabs on it, preparing some things for presentations on entitlement spending and on what it would take to fix, right size, if you will, the large entitlement programs, doing a little bit of work in healthcare, but mostly retired, but still keeping an oar in the water, so to speak.
All right, but you're staying busy. I'm hoping that you're reading. Are you writing at all?
Yeah, I haven't written any. Mostly what I'm writing are the podcasts. So it's it's not a, you know, it's something where it really matches, I guess, my end of career aspirations, which is more of a, become less of a specialist, more of a generalist. I would never compare myself to Milton Friedman, the famous economist, but you know, Milton Friedman was a highly successful academic economist who later became a speaker and an influencer before influence anyone knew what an influencer was.
Right.
So I think it's always been satisfying to try to convey economic issues to people who are interested but aren't necessarily trained economists. So we talk about some of these issues and try to help people understand what they mean and what the trade-offs are and what's at stake.
Well, one of the things we appreciate is that you are able to put these thoughts in a manner that the layman can understand. The man or woman driving around listening to the radio or at home taking care of kids or doing something at work. You have a relatable style that we can understand what you're talking about. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It's something that, like I say, there's some satisfaction in doing that. Sometime, of course, all you do is you anger the bee. you wake people up and next thing you know, they're coming after you. So, there's not a lot of unanimity on a lot of issues. We're a polarized society, as people know. But there should be a common understanding of what issues are, even if we don't agree on how to solve them. There's a great op-ed in the Wall Street the other day, and I hardly even read the op-ed. I just love the headline. It says socialism is not the answer, but it is answering the right question.
All right. And with that little gem, we're going to take a quick break. Come right back. By the way, all of our phone lines are open. If you have a question for Dr. Barkey, we would love to have you join in the conversation. The number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, we appreciate Dr. Barkey being with us until 10 o'clock this morning. Statewide, right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be back.
Dennis Bragg with the updated Town Square weather. Areas of smoke again Tuesday with highs in the mid-80s, but that will probably be the last day of this long-holding weather pattern as the high-pressure ridge starts to break down with a few clouds Tuesday night. Then Wednesday, we'll see smoke, some sun in the afternoon with increasing clouds and a chance of showers. Those may produce some thunderstorms Wednesday night. For Thursday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon and much cooler with highs in the upper 70s. Overnights and mornings will stay cool with lows in the 40s.
Hey, thanks again for joining us on this Tuesday edition of Talk Back. And I'm Peter Christian, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls. Dr. Patrick Barkey is joining us on the phone right now, Director Emeritus of UM's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And Harry has been waiting through the break. So, Harry, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Patrick. Yeah, I've heard, I don't know if it's changed now, but they said that the individual... debt, is at a record high, and also that most of the stock market has been riding on pretty much just the investments they've been pumping hundreds of billions into AI and all that. Is I'm wondering, how does that bode for future things that, you know, if all of a sudden this debt comes due and people start, you know, forfeiting on it or whatever, and this AI thing can't go on forever, so the amount of money pumping into it. So how does that look for in the future?
Thanks for the call, Harry.
Yeah, just a quick note, and that is that, you know, most things that are measured in dollars are at record highs almost all the time. So Yeah, I've seen some of the discussion about consumer debt, and it's high. The economy is large. So I used to advise business media on how to deal with numbers and so forth. And like I say, you got to be a little careful. So in terms of debt, I think what people worry about with debt is from whether or not it will impact the economy going forward. Is how is it relative to income? And I think it's actually fairly normal. The fact that the economy is larger has led to everything's at a record high, so to speak. But like I say, that's not really remarkable. The issue with the market, I think, is a great question. I don't think anybody has the answer to it. There's a lot of people a lot smarter than I am talking about it. I try to listen to what they're saying. But it is definitely being driven by the tech boom, the AI boom. I mean, look at I just read an article about what rent costs in San Francisco, and San Francisco was the poster child tech bust place 4 years ago, and now it's gone crazy again in terms of people demanding apartments and paying $10,000 a month for rent and all that sort of nonsense. So. I think those are symptomatic of a lot of froth, as you implied, directed at AI. However, I don't agree with you. Of course, it can't go on forever. Nothing goes on forever. But I think AI has legs and it can go a lot further. I think the question is where is AI going as an industry? What's its revenue model? All these kinds of things are open questions that remain to be seen, but it really has put a spark into the economy. Let's say one other thing, and that is that it's not just AI in the market. There's a lot of segments that are doing pretty well. I mean, retail, wholesale, a lot of services are doing fairly well. And does that make you worried about the future? Of course it does. But is there a sense of that we're getting closer and closer to a cliff? I don't have that feeling at all. But I do think that those are the right things to be worried about. But I don't think they're a huge concern yet.
All right, let's get Skip on the line. Skip, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Dr. Barkey, this is a little change of subject, and I did really appreciate what you just explained about AI, though. And then I was glad I was sitting down when you said $10,000 a month for rent in San Francisco. I was just like, what? So, but meanwhile, I wanted to ask you about a thing that's coming up in our legislature. I'm sure it'll be a hot topic and something that'll get tossed all over the place. Would you explain to us the fundamentals of, and is it going to be making much of a difference if our legislature somehow does something about our tax situation and we end up with some sort of a flat tax? Would you explain the fundamentals of that? Are we spinning our wheels? Is it going to make much of a change in anybody's the finality of what happens to their taxes every year? Or is it something that's significant and that we should look into? Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Skip.
Yeah, great question. We were just talking about that in between the program segments. Okay, so a flat tax is my stock answer to that is that it matters greatly what is taxed. The fact that it's a flat tax rate is not a huge change. The way Montana's income tax structure works, it has for quite a long time. It's progressive. Boy, that word, you can't say that word anymore, can you? But in other words, as you make more and more income, you get into a higher and higher tax bracket. That's arithmetically true in Montana, but the reality is that most people find themselves in the highest tax bracket relatively quickly for full-time jobs in Montana. So going to a flat tax, in other words, a tax with a fixed rate, not one that's progressive. As you make more money, you go into a higher rate. Going to a flat tax from where we are now in that sense is not a huge change. In fact, it's the natural evolution of where our current government has been taking us. So we reduced the number of brackets. We reduced them, I think, a couple different times. And this time, if we go to a flat tax. The big question in tax policy, though, is what is taxed, right? So what do we tax capital gains? Do we tax unrealized capital gains? Do we tax wealth? Do we tax, how do we deal with business expenses? How do we deal with, mortgage interest? All these kinds of things.
We got about 30 seconds before the break. Go ahead.
Thanks. That's where the complications are with taxes. That's why it takes you so long to finish your tax return, particularly at the federal level, because of all those different slices and dices. So I think the essence of the flat tax, flat numerical rate, I don't think it'll matter some, but it's an evolutionary change, not a revolutionary one at this point.
We're going to come right back more with Dr. Barkey when we return from this break. And the phone lines are open. If you have a question, give us a call, 406-721-1290. We'll be right back.
Montana State News Network.
On the fire lines in the West Pioneers, firefighters taking advantage of some clearing in the smoke using more than 24 tanker retardant drops to stop what is now the largest fire in the state this year, the Sand Creek Fire, which has now burned nearly 16,000 acres, forcing evacuations along the Pioneer Scenic Byway and down into the northern Grasshopper Creek Valley. The adjacent Bobcat Lakes Fire to the north has also burned over 7,600 acres. The fires have continued to try running to the east, with firefighters working to catch spot fires along the byway. The fires in the West Pioneers aren't the only ones keeping firefighters on edge right now. The Black Bear Fire, burning in the Sapphire Range east of Hamilton, is now over 1,800 acres with no containment as fire crews work to drive the blaze into previous burn scars in hopes of slowing it down. Meanwhile, the Moose Fire, which has been burning for a couple of weeks west of Phillipsburg, is now over 4,500 acres. Numerous forest roads are closed in the area. The Granite County Sheriff has issued a yellow evacuation warning for all residents south of the Montana Highway 38 junction with Moose Lake Road. That includes Moose Lake Road, Ross Fork Road, Copper Creek Campground, and the Moose Lake areas. The red evacuation order for Frog Pond Basin remains in effect. A mistake during some planking means prison for an eastern Montana man. Tracy Taylor explains why.
A Laurel man has pleaded guilty to a federal gun charge after prosecutors say he accidentally shot himself in the leg. 27-year-old Joel Antonio Crusell II was under felony indictment and prohibited from possessing a firearm when authorities say he was target shooting with a .22 caliber revolver in Laurel in February. Prosecutors say Crusell shot himself in the calf while putting the gun back into its holster. He faces up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Sentencing is set for December 9th. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
This is the Montana State News Network.
For more on these stories and others around Montana, download the Montana State News app.
Are you ready to take back Montana's future? Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement to restore Montana's prosperity. We're fighting to cut property taxes, expand school choice, and eliminate job-killing regulations. But we can't do it without you. Join us today. Take action. Knock on doors. Make calls. Influence lawmakers. Be a part of the movement that's putting power back in the hands of Montanans. Sign up now at AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Hi, I'm Attorney General Austin Knutson. When you see emergency lights on the side of the road, slow down and move over. It's dangerous for first responders to help motorists on the side of the road while cars are buzzing by at 80 miles an hour. In Montana, when you see emergency lights on the side of the road, you must slow down and move over, or face a fine or even jail time. It's the law. When you see someone pulled over, slow down and move over. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
We're back on TalkBack. The phone lines are open for Dr. Patrick Barkey. If you have a quick question, give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And Dr. Barkey, we were talking during the break about a flat tax, and it just seems like that would be a very popular sort of tax rather than a progressive tax. And you had some comments on that.
Well, it's not popular with everyone. I mean, the progressive tax, there's a reason why a progressive tax is around, and that's because people think that, and properly so, they think that those with more income have more ability to support government, so they should pay a higher rate. So it is a democracy, and that's what we get. So it's not that different. I think I was joking that when the flat tax, when that phrase first became popularized, it was coupled with the idea of simplifying taxes so that we could fill out our tax returns on a postcard. And I think that is something that's probably not going to happen in our lifetimes. Having a flat tax rate is perfectly doable, and it would represent in some people's minds a simplification. But what is tax? I mean, let me just give you an example. Let's talk about the federal tax, because the federal tax is important for Montana, because Montana's state income tax, personal income, adopts, by and large, the federal definitions of income. So everything that Congress decides on income, with how capital gains are treated and so forth, is immediately adopted by Montana. So these discussions matter. And when you look at the federal income tax, an enormous proportion of households in the U.S. pay no income tax at all. And the reason for that, of course, is because of all the standard deduction and all the other various deductions that people can take. So that's an outcome which some people applaud, some people don't. But it happens because of all the calculations and all the details of how you arrive at what taxable income is. And all of that does not go away by simply going from progressive rate structure to a flat rate structure. So I just want to make sure that people understand that, because tax simplification is probably not in our future, but a flat tax maybe.
Well, now the average consumer might think that a flat tax would be simpler than what all the various tax incremental increments that we have right now.
Yeah, but wait till there's what they think they're getting and what they'll actually get. So yeah, it will be simpler. But Montana income taxes are simpler anyway, simply because we've all done all the calculations. So the federal only apply the state laws. It doesn't take too long to do a state tax return for most Montana households, but the federal one is the one that really is a problem. And nothing is going to change in that regard by going to a flat rate structure. It does do some important things that the governor is really, and many people agree with him, and I can't say it's a bad idea, is that a flat rate structure gives you, removes the penalty, if you will, for working harder and making more money. You pay more in tax, but you don't find yourself all of a sudden in a higher tax bracket.
Okay. Is that good news or bad news?
It's neither. I'll tell you, it's really a policy choice. What you see typically is a ping-ponging over the generations between one and another. You start with a tax rate that's fixed, and then you change it. Look, we have the same thing in the property tax now.
Right.
We essentially have a graduated rate that people pay on property depending on its value. And the pressure to do that is always going to be there. And if we go to a flat rate structure, that pressure is not going to go away.
Well, I will tell you, we have a modest home that we were able to pay off. But simply, the property taxes have gone absolutely through the roof the last couple of years. And it's concerning to us because we are senior citizens, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's a different issue, and I'd be happy to talk about it. The answer I give to that recently, and obviously this is not a new situation, it's been accelerating for quite a few years. But the answer I've been giving to that question, Peter, lately, has been to say that property taxes are working actually exactly as they're designed. They tax the value of property. And the big story in Montana, as in many other states, but the big story in Montana is that the value of residential property has skyrocketed.
Right.
And so when you have a tax based on that, so there's only so much you can do with the property tax itself.
Right.
The real issue is what's happening in housing, what's happening in building. Why is residential property skyrocketing in value? And the short answer, which is not going to satisfy people, but I think it's true. It might not be all the truth, but the short answer is because we don't build enough. And so the value of what exists goes up.
Well, with that, we're going to come right back after the break. We have Gary, who's waiting very patiently on the phone to visit with you. Dr. Barkey is going to be with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. So if you have a question for him, please pick up the phone, give us a call. We'd love to have you on Talkback this morning, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And, of course, Dr. Barkey, Director Emeritus of UM's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And we're going to come right back after this quick timeout and take Gary's call. Can you believe that?
Helping your inner circle prepare for emergencies can start in many ways. Put together an emergency kit with YPOL. Create a family communication plan with your tita. Remind Bai to keep a backup battery charged. It all starts with a simple step. Telling those you care about to be ready for the worst. So start a conversation and plan for emergencies together. Get more tips at ready.gov/start. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When I was diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma, I didn't know it was a blood cancer. It's one of more than 100 different types, and they're all treated differently, and the symptoms can look like other things, so it could be hard to diagnose. I had a fever for weeks. I was so tired all the time, and I didn't feel like eating. This can feel scary, but if you know what to look for, you'll know what to tell your doctor. And you can get in touch with Blood Cancer United. They were there for me, and they can be there for you too.
Go to bloodcancerunited.org to learn more.
Hey, it's the Tuesday edition of Talkback. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And, of course, our special guest on the phone, Dr. Patrick Barkey, Director Emeritus of U of M's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And Gary's been waiting the longest. Gary, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter, for taking my call. And Dr. Barkey, what's frustrating for people like myself? I'm 90 years old. I had to leave my house because I couldn't afford to pay the property tax. What's frustrating is we send people to Helena to change so people can live in their house, but they will not pass the sales tax to charge tourism, but they sure will charge for seniors on their Social Security on your property, and lots of people can't stay in their house anymore. So my idea is years ago, I spent a lot of time in the Elks traveling, and 47 states have sales taxes, local option taxes. There are 9 communities that have resort taxes, like Westone, Yellowstone. But you think about all the people that come to Billings. If they would charge 5 cents on the dollar, you could do away with the property tax and income tax, like South Dakota does not have either one. So why don't Montana leaders try to create some? Because right now, people can't even pay their insurance on their cars. It's that inflation has driven up. The other thing is, if you don't pay your property tax, they can take your house away from you. You can never own it. So would you please explain how do we change, get people to understand we cannot keep charging for someone that no longer stay in their house?
Thank you for the call, sir. That's a heartfelt question there, Dr. Barkey.
Yeah, and that's one of the real key issues. So here's one thing I would suggest, Gary, because you mentioned a lot of issues there. The property tax is a local tax. So the property tax is there to pay for local services. But there's no incentive that those folks have to streamline or make that tax, make those tax dollars go further. It's hard to get this out in a breath of air, but it's the localities. It is the mayor, the council, and so forth that make the decisions that end up putting that tax where it is. The legislature designs the system, but it's the locality that is passing the taxes. So one thing to do with property taxes is to simply hold the people who are voting to either increase or hold property taxes where they are, hold them accountable, and quite frankly, if they're not spending money wisely, then maybe you need other people making the decisions. That is something that is kept hidden from a lot of Montanans, but it really is hiding in plain sight. In my county, in Missoula County, both the city and the county have raised taxes two consecutive years, and you really have to question why, and that opens a big can of worms. In terms of what's really making taxes go up high right now, though, is what's going on in housing markets, and I think that's something that is coming from government that is, it's very difficult to afford a lot of things. It's tough to pay your tax bill, but it's also just tough to buy a house if you don't already have one. So a lot of issues involved there, but I don't think it's effective to simply turn to the legislature and ask them to fix it. Sales tax, that's another issue. I'm going to wait and see if Peter says I have time.
Well, we'll tell you what, we have less than a minute left before we take a break, so we can dive into that topic if you'd like. And we do have Tom waiting on the phone. We're going to get to his call as well. So Dr. Barkey will be here with us till 10 o'clock this morning. So if you have a question or a comment about Montana's economy or what's going on here in Missoula or the state of Montana, give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Dr. Barkey, of course, is Director Emeritus at U of M's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. And again, he'll be with us till 10 o'clock this morning. For Nick Questions and I'm Peter Christian, thanks so much. And we're going to get Tom's call, hopefully yours as well, at 406-721-1290. Talk back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
If you're a local,
oftentimes the wheelchairs our veterans and first responders receive from their healthcare providers are subpar at best. Some are falling apart with a years-long waiting list for a new one. This lag causes a tremendous amount of stress for our heroes and creates a burden for their caregivers. Isolation leads to depression. We build what they need to get outdoors, hunting, fishing, or playing sports. Join the mission at wheelchairsforwarriors.org.
It's Talk Back, and we're in our with the last half hour of Talk Back for this Tuesday with Dr. Patrick Barkey, Director Emeritus of U of M's Bureau of Business and Economic Research. Phone lines lighting up with Tom, who's up first. Tom, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead.
Yeah, good. Good morning, Dr. Barkey. A lot of talk in politics these days about democratics, socialism, and you've been in this business for, I don't know, not going to
question your age, but probably 30, 40 years anyway. Maybe you could tell everyone where socialism has actually ever worked. And the other is, what's the difference between a lot of people say socialism works in Scandinavia, you know, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and places like that. And maybe you could explain how that's really not socialism, what they do. So anyway, just a few things about that. And then the fact that the county of Missoula, county and city of Missoula are both raising property taxes again for this coming year. So thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I already mentioned that about Missoula County and city property taxes, and that's certainly something that is seen by many people as business as usual, but it's death by a thousand cuts for those who are paying the taxes in many cases. In terms of socialism, it's interesting. You know, we're an economy of, what, 320 million people, you know, $35 trillion, give or take, nationally in the U.S. It's hard to describe an economy in a simple word. So it's hard to say Sweden's socialist, and the U.S. is capitalist, because the truth is neither, right? I mean, we have a socialist edge to many things we do here in the U.S., and they certainly have a good dose of capitalism in Sweden. Where socialism, you know, when you, and I'm not going to get into the philosophy of it, but when you have the notion of common ownership of productive assets, where has that worked? And I would say, you tell me, because I haven't seen a place where it's worked. I've seen places where certainly, you know, you go to countries like the UK, or you go to countries where there's been nationalized industries, where they take the steel industry, they take some industry, and they make it government-owned, and then the government runs it, and so forth. That has not worked very well in terms of propelling growth. Growth right now is in the U.S., and the U.S. is the risk-taking, more capitalist, more market-oriented economy, globally speaking, and we are leading the world in growth right now. And so it's hard to talk about these kinds of issues with broad scopes, but in terms of what socialism means in a place like New York City, or in a place like, I don't know, like Michigan, where the one senator won the primary and so forth, what that means is less socialism and more socialist policies that get closer to and tilt the seesaw, if you will, towards a direction of common ownership, government-run enterprises, and so forth. And you know, I can't sit here in a couple breaths of air and say that works, but I don't think. I think, as I said to Peter and Nick a few minutes ago, I think socialism is not the answer to the problems we have in the U.S. economy, but at least it is asking the right questions. And that is, why is it so doggone hard for a good chunk of Americans to afford the kinds of things that previous generations used to enjoy?
You bet. Let's get Ron from Plentywood on the line. Ron, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Yeah, concerning the, you know, property tax, sales tax discussion that comes up all the time. I'm with a, you know, think like a lot of people that I'd probably vote for a sales tax if you got rid of the damn property tax first. But I will never vote for one with both of them in place. Has anybody, I just thought of this, is, you know, what if we, the state of Montana, taxed just out of state people? Has anybody ever ran the numbers to see what the state could do with that idea?
Well, first off, it would be difficult to do administratively and constitutionally.
Okay.
But if you're talking about coming up with a tax that fell more heavily on out of state, there's been a lot of analysis done of that, particularly the sales tax. I think the results are not black and white, though. It's not like all property taxes paid by residents, all sales taxes paid by out of state. I'm sure you can appreciate that. But
yeah,
even the proportion there might surprise you, because Out-of-state people do pay a fair chunk of property tax, especially now that we've increased the second home tax. So,
well, I'm thinking more in line, over the counter sales tax, by tourists that come here, would certainly amount to quite a bit of money without having to tax, Montana residents going and buying the same things. Is that just a logistical nightmare, an accounting nightmare?
Well, we already tax two things that tourism primarily pay. We already tax gasoline, and people don't like to talk about taxing gasoline, but enormous amount of spending by tourists is on gasoline, and we already tax accommodations, which is not perfect either. A lot of Montanans use hotels within Montana, but there you go. So it's not like we haven't tried to crack that nut. It's just the idea of having a tax where you have to show, let's say, your ID and prove that you're from Montana to be exempt from a tax. That kind of tax doesn't exist, to my knowledge, aside from, some fees and so forth for hunting. But that kind of tax would be difficult, like I say, both administratively and constitutionally to really implement.
And with that, we're up against a break here in about 30 seconds. And, of course, we're getting into our final segments with Dr. Barkey. We'd really appreciate his time joining us this morning. Annie and Jeff are both waiting to visit with you when we come back from the breaks. Some other phone lines are open as well, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Those are the numbers to get in touch with TalkBack. And we appreciate the fact that folks are calling from all over the state of Montana. We thank you for listening and for joining in the conversation. You make it very interesting, and we appreciate each and every one of you. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout. TalkBack statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Thinking about building.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Talk back in the final segment now on this Tuesday, August 11th. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And again, a big thank you to Dr. Patrick Barkey, Director Emeritus of U of M's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, for sharing his thoughts. And let's get Annie on the line right now. Annie, good morning. You're on with Dr. Barkey. Go ahead.
Dr. Barkey, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm calling from Billings, and I am questioning what is happening with our data center by Quantico. On some things that I read yesterday, the people that were helping Cassie, and I personally don't know her, were detained by the sheriff's office for being on the fairgrounds with a clipboard under her arm. And those kind of things, I guess, as a senior, frighten me that we would be so politically correct or incorrect that we would detain someone for having a clipboard under their arm when we should be supporting our fair, enjoying ourselves, and now we have to worry about going there, what could happen. And I feel like if the data center were more transparent, we would be more trusting as citizens. And since it wasn't transparent at all until she brought some things to light, it raises some questions. So my comment is, as a community, we should be finding out all the details so that we can make a good, informed decision for our community and for our state. That's just my comment. And a thanks to her for putting herself out there and open to a lot of obviously harmful things going on. So that's my comment, is on the data center.
All right. Thank you for the call. Dr. Barkey, any thoughts on that?
Well, happy to talk about data centers. I know nothing about what happened at the fair. Sorry to hear about that. I think the private sector doesn't win a lot of prizes for being transparent. I mean, they're making deals, and to lay all their cards out on the table at all times is something that is just really not in their DNA. And you have to see it from their point of view. They're dealing with a highly fluid situation. So they'd love to tell you everything they're going to do, but they don't know what they're going to do. So just really quickly, that data center is a scalable and good-sized project. It's a big facility, potentially a big facility. It's a different kind of investment than we've seen before. And I'm not here trying to sell it or diss it either way, but I'm just saying that the investment and the risk taking by that company to try to make that project happen tells you it has a reasonable prospect of success, and they're playing it the way that they see fit. And I'm not saying they don't take into account the concerns of the community. I think very much they do. But it's a moving process is the best I can say. So it's hard to be transparent to say exactly what they're going to do, and they themselves don't know it.
So, Mr. Nick, do we have time to get Jeff's? Nope.
I don't think so, yeah. Yep. So, Patrick, if you just want to take the next 2 minutes to talk about anything that's pressing on your mind.
You bet.
Well, I did have the good fortune to attend the my old center's economic update, and it was interesting in terms of assessing where the Montana economy is now. We've really plateaued in terms of job growth. There hasn't been a lot of job growth over the last year, but neither has there been any uptick in the unemployment or the unemployment rate. So the labor market is stable, I guess, depending on what word you want to put on it. I think income growth has been relatively strong. I think the tight labor market has helped workers in many situations get better wage increases than perhaps in the past. So I think the gas price situation, which is still playing out, is something which is hurting a lot of Montanans because we use a lot of gas. We use a lot of gasoline and diesel more so than the average American household. And I think there's individual industries that have some challenges. Tourism has really been hurt by international tourism. Our borders aren't as open as they used to be, and the politics has gotten involved there. So that's an issue as well. Inflation, too much to fit in this amount of time. But I think the data centers aren't the only investment that's on the cusp of happening. I think there's also some new developments in Great Falls with manufacturing developments. That would be, Janicki Industries,
right,
coming from Washington State. That would really move the needle in that community and would represent one of the biggest industrial investments ever.
Dr. Barkey, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. We look forward to our next visit.
Likewise, Peter and Nick. Good to join you.
Thank you, Dr. Barkey. We appreciate it. All right, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Wednesday, what's going on, sir?
We'll kick around open phones for the first hour, and then at 9 o'clock, Governor Greg Gianforte will be in our studio for about a half hour, and then we'll finish with more open phones. So, yeah, get your calls in early because he'll be taking some.
All right, that's awesome. We appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that the governor is going to be in town, and he's going to be joining us here in the studio. So that's a real treat. So we appreciate that. And thanks to all of you for your calls this morning, and especially a big thank you to Dr. Patrick Barkey for sharing his expertise with our listeners today. Have yourselves a great day. Get out and enjoy it. And we'll see you tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for another edition of Talk Back.